From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour will be made sometime in the future, and the most important component is when. This hour, we're talking about clean energy and innovation, the kind of innovation that might allow us to change energy systems to something cleaner, something that might remove the need for a gas station on every corner. Later this month, Nexus NY will host an event aimed directly at this process, and they've invited one of the great science communicators in the world to come to Rochester. You know Brian Greene as a physicist and author, the host of Nova on PBS, for his TED Talks, and more. The Washington Post has called Brian Greene the finest explainer of abstract science concepts in the world. And we're thrilled to have him this hour. We're going to be joined by Brian Greene in just a moment. Also joined by Doug Berkley, who's the executive director of Nexus NY. Doug, nice to have you in studio.
Thank you.
And before we jump into our science discussion and our talk about a clean energy future, Veronica Volk is here, my colleague in studio, talking about pledging this weekend, the importance of the listeners to our community here at WXXI, Veronica.
Absolutely. We certainly appreciate our listeners. And today, Evan, I appreciate you and your show. Today is the best day ever. You have theoretical physicist, string theorist, and master science communicator here on Connections. And it's this kind of program. And this you have this monthly science roundtable and all sorts of great issues and great topics that we get the opportunity to delve into right around the lunch hour. And we would just want to remind you as a listener, you can call 454-6300 or 800-295-9994 or go to wxxi.org/give to pledge your support for programs like these and other programs that we carry here on WXXI. And if you're listening from Finger Lakes Public Radio, head over to weos.org, donate to them. I say that because in public radio, we are a family here, and we are a family that we support and we value community, we value connection, education, the arts, and of course, we value science. Right, Evan?
Well, we do. One of the things that I really, really take great pleasure in, because I was not, by the way, a big science person growing up. I mean, as in, that was not where I excelled in class. My first D was in a chemistry. My only D. I got a D in chemistry in high school.
No.
I just want you to know that. And I actually really tried hard. But that has changed over the years for me. My interest in science was got to get by as a student, and now it's absolute obsession sometimes. I mean, I love great communicators, whether it's people like Adam Frank or so many others who come on this program, Brian Koberline from RIT. Don't you love people who can explain things in really effective ways?
Yes, and I'm going to take this opportunity to try to embarrass you a little bit, Evan, but Evan Dawson here on Connections is such a great moderator and mediator for these conversations, and he helps bring these topics to you in a way that's digestible and understandable and interesting. I know, I'll say it. And if you appreciate him like we do over here, call 454-6300 or 800-295-9994, or I know some of you are listening online, it's wxxi.org/give. And why don't you tell us a little bit about why you value this program. I know you value it because you're listening to it, and I know we value you over here, Evan.
Thank you, Veronica.
You're welcome.
All right. We're going to do our best to get that connection made with Brian Greene, physicist and author and PBS host, among so many other things. He is coming to Rochester on Tuesday, October 27th. That's 2 weeks from tomorrow for an event at the George Eastman Museum on East Avenue. Nexus NY has got a clean energy event, and they are bringing Brian Greene. And Doug Berkley, why did you want Brian Greene in Rochester for this event?
Yeah, so that's a great question. We certainly wanted to bring someone who appealed to our target customer base. And so our program is designed specifically for scientists, and specifically for scientists who have developed cool things but want to translate those into the marketplace. And so commercialization is what we're focused on. And one of the things that we find is that scientists specifically are great about talking technically, but not so great about talking with customers. And so to your point earlier about the Washington Post and Brian's resume, he's one of the best at explaining complex things simply.
Well, we're told he's running just a few minutes behind, and he'll be joining us in just a couple of minutes. So I would say this, Doug, as well. We're not going to make this... Doug's not going to be put in political hot water this hour, because sometimes when we talk about alternative energy, I know people get fired up. People want to know if we can change systems. So let me just ask you a broad question about the power of innovation. When we've talked about energy and we talked about the way we consume energy, everybody likes being able to turn the lights on. I'm holding a cell phone. I like that it works. I'm on a computer. I like that I can press a button and turn it on. So I'm not somebody who, you know, I'm not a Luddite. I like where we are, and I would like to make it more efficient and cleaner. But sometimes people talk about our energy future as if it's two choices. One, continue on the same course and never change, or two, change and have economic catastrophe. I tend to think that innovators, entrepreneurs, are a big part of this. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. There are the future clearly holds lots of fossil fuels, and little by little we will take up new demand with alternative sources. And frankly, the third option, of course, is to pursue energy efficiency initiatives, which are even better than both, because they just prevent us from using energy wastefully as we do often today.
Doug Berkley is here from Nexus NY, which is, by the way, what's the short answer for what it is Nexus NY does? You're 2 years old now, yeah?
We are 2 years old, so Nexus NY is an acronym for the New Energy Accelerator in upstate New York. And most simply, we help scientists to translate technologies from research labs into the marketplace. So our focus is on commercialization.
The ratio of scientific investment to sort of operating companies and success stories hasn't always been as good as we should hope, yes?
I would say it's abysmal.
It's terrible. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, so I think the current numbers are about $300 million of research. For every $300 million of research that's funded at a university, there's about one startup that is created. And of course, that's across all disciplines.
Hold on, let's do that again. Do that again. For every $300 million...
Correct.
Spent where?
Broadly in research at universities.
Okay.
There's one startup that is spun out of a university.
I'm not an expert on ROI, but I feel like we could do better.
Yeah, it's not probably exactly a fair example, right? So universities do lots of great things. They
Absolutely.
Train scientists. They work on problems that are fundamental to our understanding of the way the world works and other things. So I think universities are conflicted, and commercialization is one of the things that they do, but it's well down the list.
And when I think about the efforts toward different sources of energy, there's always been a debate about, well, what do you mean by clean? You know, what defines clean? What's the short answer for clean energy, Doug?
Sure. For us, it's the ability to generate electricity using non-conventional mechanisms, non-fossil fuels, or the ability to remove CO2 emissions, or the ability to save energy from the grid.
So most non-fossil fuels probably fall into this category, that we are most non-fossil energy sources.
Correct.
Would probably fall into this
Correct.
Category. The solars of the world, the interesting kinds of probably cellulosic ethanols, those kind of things?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the obvious two that people think about are solar and wind. These have become big industries with huge investments. The folks that participate in our program are often working on things that are just a little different and maybe a little bit more pragmatic. So we're not going to save the world, but we may actually find and push some interesting new technologies into the marketplace.
Are there any examples you can share with us?
Yeah, so we have a couple of former scientists from Eastman Kodak that are participating in our program that have developed some new materials which fundamentally can change the way that we produce OLED or organic light-emitting diode lights. And so if you can reduce the electricity consumed by lights by 40% or 50% even versus LEDs, that could be a significant savings overall.
Okay. That's just one example that Nexus NY is interested in. If you're just joining us 2 weeks from tomorrow, that's Tuesday, October 27th, what's the timing of the event, and what do you want people to know about what's coming up 2 weeks from tomorrow, Doug?
Yeah, sure. So the event, the doors open around 4:15 at the George Eastman House.
Oh, sorry, it's the Eastman Museum now, Doug. They changed the name last week on you. But yes, this George Eastman House, as you know,
at
the Eastman.
My flyers predated the.
I know they just changed it on you. It's the Eastman Museum. Okay,
right.
So doors open at 4:15.
4:15. Dr. Green will give his talk on innovation, exploration, and discovery, starting at 5:00. That will last about 45 minutes. We'll have some time set aside for a brief Q&A afterwards. And then starting at 6, we will hear from the companies who are graduating from Nexus New York. So there are 6 companies who will give 5 or 6 minute updates on the work that they're doing.
Okay. And you want to preview any of those? Can you kind of give us a little window there?
Yeah. So we have a really broad portfolio. We are technology agnostic. So if I, and we are
technology agnostic.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so
open to all kinds of different technology solutions.
Correct. Okay. We ask that the researcher make the energy argument. Yes.
Can I jump in and say, I'm with you. If I told you I'm putting all my chips on corn-based ethanol, would you tell me that I missed it by probably a decade? That ship has sailed.
Oh, I don't know if it's sailed. We have,
One of my goals on this program is to make fun of corn-based ethanol as much as I can.
Well, I can't help you there.
Okay. All right. But the bottom line is, as a technology agnostic, there's a lot of different ideas out there. So
correct.
Continue. Go ahead.
Correct. So locally, we have a team from RIT that has some fuel cell technology that they are developing in the research labs. Originally funded by NIST, the National Institute of Science and Technology. Standards.
Once in a while, these acronyms are very good. NIST.
Right. So they're developing a fuel cell, which potentially can be used for lots of applications, but they found a specific military application where the low noise, the extended range, and the fuel flexibility are key differentiators. So back to the earlier comment, this technology is likely not going to change the world, but it can change a piece of it.
When you talk about $300 million to 300 million to one, and I think it is unfair because some scientists will tell you, well, they're not out there to try to create, a startup company, et cetera.
Right.
So I take Doug's point on that number is maybe a little bit too broad and unfair. But what should the number be? Do you have an idea in mind about how much more efficient we can be?
Well, I can tell you I had a chance to visit MIT recently with a few colleagues. And they were bemoaning the fact that their number is $30 million to one. And right,
wow.
So you know, when people talk about the models for how we innovate or how we translate technologies from universities to the marketplace, MIT and Stanford are often talked about as the key successes. So best in class right now seems to be around $30 million.
You talked about solar and wind being very visible in the non-fossil fuel energy world, but you also said that some of the other ideas that are in play are, in your words, more pragmatic. And
right.
Why did you use the term more pragmatic than solar and wind?
Well, even solar and wind now, the amount of investment that is taking place is enormous. And so, there's a valid question about whether or not there's a good entry point for a startup company into those markets.
Because they're so competitive?
Because they're competitive, they're capitally intense, they require an incredible amount of investment. Yeah.
Okay. But does that mean they are cost prohibitive to success in the future? I mean, does that equation have to change? Because it does sound to me like solar, for example, the one stat I hear all the time is that solar now employs more people than the coal industry. And, that it is growing in leaps and bounds. Is it too, are you concerned that it's cost prohibitive though for startups?
Yeah, so I don't know if it's cost prohibitive for startups. I think there's two things that need to happen. The cost of the technology needs to come down if we're going to deploy it more widely.
Yep.
And there's lots of people working on that, right? And then there's how do I find an entry point as a startup where I can actually participate in that market? And again, because you have companies like GE and Siemens now who are making huge investments in these industries, it becomes a little tougher for the researcher from RIT to find an entry point.
We're talking to Doug Berkley, who is the executive director of Nexus NY. And if you missed it earlier, Doug told you what Nexus stands for. Doug, Nexus stands for?
The New Energy Accelerator in Upstate New York.
All right. So Nexus NY, about 2 years old, and they have famous physicist, television host, author Brian Greene coming to Rochester 2 weeks from tomorrow for their big event at the George Eastman Museum on East Avenue. It's an event that runs 4:30 to 8:30. 2 weeks from tomorrow, who's it really aimed at, Doug? Who do you want to come out 2 weeks from tomorrow?
Yeah, so ideally we would like lots of potential future program participants to come out and hear about the program and hear how our companies have evolved since they've participated over the last 10 months. But it's also an opportunity for our companies to get on a stage and brag a little bit about their success. So it's ideally, we want community members, we want scientists from Western New York, and we're actually hoping to have a bunch of young students as well.
I heard a lot. I felt like 10 years ago, I heard a lot about algae, for example. I have heard less about it over the years, but that's probably only because I'm ignorant. Is that an example of one of the things that's out there?
It's certainly an example. We don't have anyone working on algae in the context of our current program. but there are lots of people that are working on those types of things.
What are some of the really cool, maybe even mind-bending things that are out there?
Yeah, so we talked about pragmatic solutions earlier. There's a company that just recently formed from the University of Binghamton, and they have a vision of putting passive solar window coatings on every window that's produced. Right, so you talked about solar, right? So most people think of harnessing the light's power through photovoltaics. Another problem is that the window, like the one over my corner here, lets in not only visible light, but it lets in infrared and UV light. And so we are allowing a lot of heat in the building. And if there was a way to put a very simple and inexpensive coating on that window so that it allowed the visible light in but blocked the heat, that could be a huge potential benefit to building owners.
Okay. Anything else out there on your mind?
So again, some other pragmatic solutions. We have a company from Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, which is working on upcycling. So they're taking agricultural waste and they're turning it into building materials. And so the ceiling panels in this room serve no real functional purpose, but they could potentially remove moisture from the air, and in doing so, reduce the requirement for HVAC loads. So potential energy savings.
When you think about our energy future, is it the president has used sort of the approach is, what's the phrase he used? I was going to say one size fits all. It's not one size fits all. It's the all of the above. Boy, oh boy, it's a Monday and my brain just shut down. The president's talked about all of the above right now. He's not talking about 10 years or 100 years. The president's talking about right now. How do we make sure we get to where we need to be? We're not going to get rid of fossil fuels tomorrow. He's talked about all of the above. Do you view the long-term future as more diverse than just, hey, what industry is going to replace fossil fuels? What is going to take gas stations off every corner and replace it with X? Is it more diverse than that, or do you think eventually we will land on something that almost monolithically replaces fossil fuels?
Yeah, I think trying to predict the future in these areas is probably a little foolish. Clearly, over the next 50 years, we have to utilize an all-of-the-above strategy. Farther out than that, I think we've got lots of innovators working on neat things, and we'll see how it develops.
Let me bring in somebody who can give us a sense for what they think the future is going. And this is someone who's written about the future, time travel, various dimensions, and so many more things. And we are thrilled to have Dr. Brian Green on the program. He's a physicist, an author, PBS host, and he will be in Rochester 2 weeks from tomorrow for this event. He's on the line with us now. Brian, how are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Very good. Thank you for taking the time. I've got Doug Berkeley here from Nexus NY. He's been talking about what's coming up 2 weeks from tomorrow, but let me just start with you and give us a sense for what you will be talking about in Rochester when it comes to innovation, science, and the possible, nobody knows, Brian, not even you, I don't think, exactly where we're going with our energy future, but where you think we might be headed.
Yeah, so I won't be focusing directly on these very profoundly important questions of energy in the future, but I will be focusing on the first two topics that we were talking about, in particular, the idea of innovation. And I'll be describing a handful of vignettes from the history of physics that span topics like black holes and the Big Bang, and the far future of the universe and the fundamental laws of reality, and trying to give people a sense of the kind of creative thinking, the kind of creative insight, the kind of imaginative thinking that was vital for progress on these profound ideas, because one can't help but think that the great progress in fundamental physics should be a model for the kind of innovation that we need in a whole variety of different areas, including, of course, the need for more efficient forms of energy.
Are you someone, Brian, who thinks, and again, we're not going to speak too directly about energy, about possible alternatives, as you say. That's not exactly the focus of your talk. But are you someone who thinks that the scientific world does need an urgent focus on innovation, and that, you know, whether it's James Hansen from NASA talking about using the free market, using the power of innovation to bring solutions here, do you believe that that has to happen sooner
than
later?
Yeah, clearly we're at a crisis point, and rather than trying to deal with these issues long after the fact, where we're trying to retrofit the world to fit a new model that's forced down our throat because otherwise we can't survive, we need to take the bull by the horns and figure out how to contain our energy use, to produce energy in a way that will allow us to meet the world's needs and do it in a way that's clean. So clearly, there are many ideas that people have put forward. There are many creative ideas that have put forward. We need to have an environment in terms of funding, in terms of the capacity for experimenting, that allows these innovations to be tried out and to allow the marketplace of ideas to do its thing and pick out those ideas that have the most promise. So yes, while I won't speak directly to any of these wonderful proposals, the pattern is exactly the same pattern that we recognize in breakthrough scientific thinking all the time.
And yet, Brian, you're somebody who you've built this amazing career, whether it's working on superstring and so many fascinating concepts, and then communicating that to the general public in a way that allows us a chance to see inside what's happening in the science world, even if we don't have advanced degrees. You do that maybe better than anybody in the world today, which is an amazing, amazing thing to say. And yet, right now, at this very moment, there are people composing emails to me saying, how dare you have another program talking about the need for energy innovation because NASA is helping promote a hoax, and none of this is actually happening, and that NASA can put a probe on Mars, but they are fraudulent when it comes to climate, et cetera, and that you're wasting everybody's time. And Brian, you're somebody who is a scientist who works on explaining concepts in very simple ways. How are we ever going to grasp superstring if we can't sort of uniformly get around something as basic as climate right now?
Well, in many ways, some of the ideas at the edge of cutting-edge physics are easier to grasp than some of the more complex ideas that are at the heart of public policy issues. I mean, I got to tell you, one of the reasons why I do physics and I don't do other subjects like neuroscience or engineering, I find those areas totally fascinating. But those areas focus on problems that are really complicated, where there are so many variables, so many influences that are coming together. You know, think about the brain, right? So many cells, so many electrical circuits. It's just really complicated. Similarly, when it comes to issues of climate change, I mean, climate models are complicated beasts. And it's hard to really communicate what they're doing in detail if you're not embedded in the models, embedded in the codes, the computer codes themselves. So one of the reasons why I focus on issues which are definitely challenging intellectually to grasp, quantum mechanics, extra dimension, the string theory, and so forth, these are incredibly difficult ideas to grasp, but in a way, they're very simple from the standpoint of the number of things that need to be explained, the number of links in the explanatory chain that need to be grasped. Once you get the basic idea of these concepts, you've gone a very giant step toward grasping the overall picture. So I have great sympathy for those who are trying to communicate the more complex ideas at the heart of these public policy issues, because it is definitely a challenge.
Talking to Brian Green, who will be in Rochester 2 weeks from tomorrow as part of Nexus NY's Clean Energy event. That's at the George Eastman Museum, and you can attend. Doug Berkeley, how can people attend? How can they get involved?
So they can come on our website. It's nexus-ny.org, and there's a registration link right on the front page.
nexus-ny.org. Brian, you said you're going to be sharing just a few vignettes from the science world that help illustrate some of your points. Without giving away too much of the story, can you give us a little preview, an example?
Well, sure. So as you may know, as your listeners may know, we're coming upon a truly wondrous anniversary for physics. The 100th anniversary of the discovery of the general theory of relativity is with us, coming this November. In many ways can be viewed as the 100th anniversary, and then basically for a year after that, Einstein in 1915, 1916 was working out these ideas and showing them to the world. So that will be the core of my remarks, give some background on what Einstein discovered with the general theory of relativity, which is a theory of how the force of gravity operates. And then I'll discuss how other innovators came along and took his insights and pushed them to the next level. Remarkably, some of the places where the next generation of innovators pushed were places where Einstein himself resisted. So the idea of black holes is one that came from somebody else using Einstein's math. The idea of the Big Bang came from somebody else using Einstein's math. So it's a wonderful story to see how the most revolutionary thinker of an earlier age can become set in a particular perspective that causes him to resist going the next stage. And I think that's a wonderful story that we need to bear in mind as we try to solve our own issues, that innovation really needs to be built step by step. It needs to be generation after generation, because it really can be overwhelming for a single generation, a single collection of thinkers, to be able to take us from A to Z. We have to step through the alphabet step by step, and that's how innovation really is a collective undertaking.
We've got Brian Green on the line with us this hour as we talk about the event that's coming up 2 weeks from tomorrow in Rochester about clean energy, Nexus NY's clean energy event featuring Dr. Brian Green. He is, well, so many things. He's a physicist, an author. He is a television host, college professor, and the Washington Post said, the single best explainer of abstract scientific concepts in the world today, and rightfully so. That's Brian Green. So let's take a short break. And Brian, we'll talk a little bit more about what we have coming up in Rochester. And then I hope if you'll indulge me, I've just got a few, just kind of rapid fire science-y questions for you, just because I have to take the advantage when our listeners have you on the line. So we're going to have a little fun with Brian as well. So let's get a short break in and much more with Brian Green next on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on the Next Connections, we're talking anti-poverty initiative with the team that is putting together the new plan. Monroe County Executive Maggie Brooks, Joe Morelli from the State Assembly, Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren, and more. That's first hour. Then second hour, we're talking about eating disorders and a new push to bring in new research on the way eating disorders impact us. That's Tuesday on Connections.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from the Wealth Strategies Group at Canandaigua National Bank and Trust, offering financial planning strategies that are tailored to clients' needs. Canandaigua National Bank and Trust, investing in you.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Veronica Volk's my colleague. Just a brief interlude to say hello.
Just a brief interlude. Hi, Evan. Veronica Volk here from the WXXI Newsroom. You can call 454-6300 to pledge your support. It's our first Monday of Pledge Week. You can also call 800-295-9994, or if you're online, wxxi.org/give. Just how appropriate that we're talking about, we're previewing Dr. Green's talk here, where he's going to be talking about exploration, innovation, and discovery. And I like to think that we try to do a lot of that here at WXXI. And if you value our programming, you're listening right now, so I think that you do, please give us a call, 454-6300 or at 800-295-9994. If you've already pledged, we thank you so much for bringing this and other programs. And if you haven't already pledged, give us a call right now, 454-6300.
Thank you, Veronica.
You're welcome, Evan.
And we're talking to Brian Green, and also in studio with me is Doug Berkeley, who is the executive director of Nexus NY. And Nexus NY is about 2 years old, Doug? About 2 years old?
That's correct.
With a mission of?
Mission is to translate clean energy technologies from research labs into the marketplace.
And that's what they're going to be focusing on 2 weeks from tomorrow. Brian's going to be talking more broadly about some stories and some ideas that are related to scientific innovation and success. And boy, oh boy, what an amazing thing that they're bringing Brian Green to Rochester. So you can check out more online and register for that event, nexus-ny.org for that. Now, Brian, I'd like to play a clip from one of your TED Talks, because what I want to do for our audience, if they haven't heard your work in explaining something as simple as superstring theory or string theory, is to listen to a clip from TED. And if you don't mind, I'd like to explore a little bit more with you. So
sure.
this is Brian Green at one of his TED Talks talking about how, mathematics doesn't really work in a universe that has just three dimensions of space. might only work in a universe that has 10 dimensions of space and one dimension of time. And let's listen to this concept explained by Brian.
Dimensions might come in two varieties. There might be big, easy to see dimensions, but there might also be tiny curled up dimensions, curled up so small, even though they're all around us, that we don't see them. Imagine you're looking at something like a cable supporting a traffic light. The cable looks one dimensional from a distant viewpoint, but you and I all know that it does have some thickness. It's very hard to see it though from far away. But if we zoom in and take the perspective of, say, a little ant walking around, little ants are so small that they can access all of the dimensions, the long dimension, but also this clockwise, counterclockwise direction. This illustrates the fact that dimensions can be of two sorts, big and small, and the idea is that maybe the big dimensions around us are the ones that we can easily see, but there might be additional dimensions curled up, sort of like the circular part of that cable, so small that they have so far remained invisible. And way down in the microscopic depths of space itself, this is the idea. You could have additional curled up dimensions, so small that we don't see them, but if you were a little ultra microscopic ant walking around, you could walk in the big dimensions that we all know about, but you could also access the tiny curled up dimension that's so small that we can't see it with the naked eye or even with any of our most refined equipment, but deeply tucked into the fabric of space itself, the idea is there could be more dimensions.
Brian Greene in his TED Talk. Could be. Are there more dimensions, Brian?
Well, we don't know is the bottom line answer, but as I was saying in that TED Talk, which I think is from a decade,
yeah,
if I know the one that you picked from, our equations, when we study the attempt to realize Albert Einstein's own dream of finding what he called a unified theory, that would be one idea, one master principle that might describe all physical phenomenon, our best proposal for that unified theory is something called string theory. And without going into detail of what string theory is, it is the case that an implication of this theory, an implication of the math, is that the three dimensions of everyday experience, left, right, back, forth, and up, down, they are not the only dimensions of space. There are additional ones. And then, as I mentioned in the clip, we believe they may be hidden away within the folds of space itself, tightly tucked into minuscule shapes that are floating all around us. They're just too small for us to see.
How do you go about working through trying to disprove it? How do you poke holes in it, or how do you go about at least trying to ascertain whether there's validity there?
Well, there's two ways. One is a more theoretical and mathematical approach, where once you have this idea on the table, you theoretically try to smash it with a sledgehammer. Namely, you try to see whether it yields any mathematical contradictions or any things that make the mathematics nonsensical, paradoxes. Now, on that front, this idea of extra dimensions has passed all of our theoretical tests. So the next step, the one that we have difficulty doing, but it's the only real step that will determine if the idea is right or wrong, is to try to look for experimental or observational signatures in our data of these extra dimensions. And no doubt you know of the Large Hadron Collider, this big particle smasher in Geneva, Switzerland, that smashes protons against protons near the speed of light, famously produced the Higgs particle a couple of years ago that won the Nobel Prize. Well, if there are extra dimensions, there's at least a chance, a tiny chance, that there's a signature in the data from the Large Hadron Collider that might reveal the existence of the extra dimensions. And we, in some sense, have our fingers crossed, waiting to see if that signature does emerge from the data that they're now collecting.
Now, this is still abstract to many people, though. So let's say the signature emerges. What then? What are the implications?
Well, again, there's sort of philosophical implications, which I consider very deep, which is we would learn that reality, as we've thought about it for thousands of years, is not what we thought based on experience. We experience the world of left, right, back, forth, and up, down. To learn that there are more dimensions of space beyond those is just kind of a mind kicker of the most profound sort. But from the standpoint of our understanding of the laws of physics, this would be evidence in support of this unified approach called string theory, which would mean, at least if these ideas are supported by the data, that we would have taken a giant giant step toward revealing the fundamental way that the world is put together. And that's what physics is all about. And that would be a deeply, profoundly exciting moment.
Jake wants to know, are we any closer to developing experiments to test string theory?
Well, I wish I could sit here and say yes, but I can't. The place where string theory really flexes its muscles, where it shows its true colors, is on length scales that are fantastically small. Even by atomic standards, they are fantastically small. Or energy scales that are fantastically huge, even by the standards of the Large Hadron Collider, likely to be orders and orders of magnitude stronger, higher energy than that machine can reach. So we're in a curious situation where our mathematics allows us to make, in some sense, predictions for how string theory should show up in experiments, but our technology is such that we don't know how to reach the realms where string theory would really show itself. So we need to work very hard at the level of us theorists to try to come up with more indirect tests that we might actually be able to carry out. We're working hard to try to do that. And who knows, maybe there'll be some crazy technological breakthrough where we can access realms which by today's technology are simply beyond reach.
Talking to Brian Green, author, physicist, host on PBS, famous for his TED Talks and his ability to explain abstract science concepts. And I just want to work through a few questions that I've compiled with the help of the listening audience and then my own very limited brain. So, Brian, we'll just work down the list here. First of all, World Science U was one of my favorite ideas. I love the idea of egalitarian access to great teaching, etc. Can you tell us an update about how World Science U has gone?
Yeah, so World Science U, we launched about 18 months ago. And as you say, it's a platform, a digital platform. Content is free. And the goal was to enter the digital education revolution, but not in the way that everybody else seems to be doing it, which is by and large, not everybody, but by and large, the focus is trying to recreate the classroom experience. Our view was, let's use this new delivery vehicle to create new experiences, have interactive demonstrations that I'm unable to give my live students in the classroom, have detailed animation showing what the world looks like near the speed of light or near the edge of a black hole, animation that I'd love to show my live students in the classroom, but I don't have the resources to create that animation for 30 kids in the class. But for 100,000 people online, yeah, then the resources make sense to be expended on that kind of production. So right now we have two pilot courses on special relativity, one with math, one without. We also have about 10 what we call master classes, where we're making use of some of the greatest minds in science, the folks that pushed our understanding of cosmology, or pushed our understanding of quantum physics, or pushed our understanding of string theory, have them give dedicated lectures at a general level so that the person who just wants to know what's going on but hear it from the horse's mouth can have that experience too. So we're every month putting a new master class up. We'll have about 18 of them by the spring, and we hope to create some of these other longer courses like the relativity course, but those take a lot of work, so they're not going to be rolled out in weekly intervals, but probably in the order of every year or so, we hope to have a new one of those full courses.
Are you seeing more young women in your classes? I ask because I just saw an article, and I don't know if it was this weekend in the New York Times or elsewhere, that talked about the fact that there's new research that suggests that when young women have an opportunity to move into science fields, something even as simple as having Star Wars posters versus gender-neutral backgrounds could impact whether they feel intimidated or welcome, and that in some ways, women still don't always feel as welcome. Are we seeing more?
Well, I would say that we are seeing more. I haven't done a detailed survey to count year by year, so I don't have any real solid data to back that up myself. But certainly I would say that even if the numbers are large, and I think that they are, they're not where they could be or should be. We're not at parity. We're not at sort of 50-50. And I think it is largely the case that we haven't, at least in physics, in some of the other sciences I think people are doing better, but in physics, mathematics, we haven't quite created the atmosphere where it's fully inclusive. There's a full sense that everybody has the right to be, has the capacity and needs to follow their passion to be there. So I think that will change, and we are working toward making that change, but I would say we're not at the finish line by any means yet.
All right, working through some more questions. What's the most fun, doing a TED Talk, Nova, or Radiolab?
They're so very different. You know, TED Talk, it's up to you. You produce your own talk, so there's something very nice about creating something that you can be proud of and, you know, millions of people can watch. A Nova production, of course, is a huge team, animators, producers, directors, writers. So it's a much more of a group effort. And again, when the product turns out well, it's exciting, but it's more the kind of excitement that comes from a team effort. And what was the third one?
Radiolab.
TED Talk, Nova, Owen.
Radiolab.
Oh, Radiolab. Well, I love Radiolab. But that's I'd say I laugh the most during Radiolab because usually I'm being interviewed by Robert Krowich, who right. just makes me laugh. And I just love what they produce, say, with my interviews, many other people's interviews. So that more I listen to as an audience member, even though I'm in a handful of them. But they are the production engine, and I think they do a spectacular job of creating the most engrossing radio programs around.
Fermi wanted to know, where is everybody? He looked up at the stars.
Mean the aliens?
Where is everybody? And how would you answer his question today? Where is everybody?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily that surprising. I mean, space is big, and traveling the distances that are required is not easy. So, you know, even if there are civilizations on par with ours or even advanced, it's not obvious that they're at the level of Star Trek and being able to traverse the galaxy. My feeling, though, is that the fact that we haven't seen them is not evidence that they're not there. As we look for exoplanets, planets beyond our solar system, all that we have found is just shockingly large numbers of planets that are out there. So it only adds credence to the belief, and it is a belief, it's not based on scientific observation, but the belief that there just has to be life out there in a universe that big. Who knows, maybe we're more of a singular case than we thought, based upon the need for ingredients to come together in the right proportions and being shielded from asteroids so we have time to evolve and develop. Who knows? Maybe that is so singularly special that we are the only life, but goodness gracious, it is just hard to believe.
Okay. The Nobel Prize awarded for establishing that neutrinos have mass. And so, as you tweeted, a lot of people asking the question, could neutrinos be the dark matter? What's the brief answer?
Yeah, no, it's a very natural question, because here they are, these ghostly particles suffusing space, and if they've got mass, then maybe that contributes to the dark mass, the dark matter that we know to be out there by observations of how stars and galaxies rotate and move. And most of us think that the answer is no. The dark matter can have a small constituent coming from neutrinos. But the neutrino mass, we believe, is so small that even with the voluminous number of neutrinos that are floating through space, the total mass that they would contribute is just too small. It falls short of the amount that observation suggests must be out there.
Okay. I saw a lot of people tweeting at you about Ben Carson. Apparently, I don't know if Ben Carson actually said this. I heard people on Twitter telling you and Neil deGrasse Tyson and others to jump in and with a little lesson here. Apparently, Ben Carson said the Big Bang violates the second law of thermodynamics. I don't know if he actually said that. But
you know, he did. I looked.
He did.
I saw the actual talk where he said that. And yeah, he doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. It's a curious thing when people are willing to go on a national platform and talk about things that they just don't understand. The fact of the matter is, you can have the second law of thermodynamics completely in force, and yet, even though it says that order will degrade, that disorder will increase over time, that doesn't mean that you can't have pockets of order being created at the expense of disorder that's created in their environment. We do this all the time. Ever clean up your living room? You went from disorder to order. How did you do that? Did you violate the second law of thermodynamics? No. In the process of cleaning up your living room, you burned all sorts of fat molecules. You created heat. You made the air bounce around a little bit more quickly. You did create disorder in order to also have order in the room that was previously disordered. And this is the kind of thing that happened in moving from the earliest moments of our universe to today. Gravity is this wonderful thing that pulls matter together, can create orderly looking structures like stars and planets and ultimately plants and people, and it does that even though the net amount of disorder is increasing over time.
I hope the candidate does sit in on a class of yours then. That would be, yeah. That would be great. Last quick question for you, then I know one of our listeners wants to jump in on the phone. Do you tend to find yourself interested in films like Interstellar and The Martian? Do you think they help our understanding of science, or does Hollywood stretch too often and hurt our understanding of science?
Bottom line is, you're never going to learn science from a Hollywood film, but it can certainly get you excited about science and excited to learn about it. I've not seen the Martian picture, but Interstellar I saw, and I think it did a really good job of at least putting out there the weirdness of black holes, that time slows down near the edge of a black hole. I myself wrote a kid's book a couple years even before Interstellar about a boy going to the edge of a black hole and time slowing down. And we turned it into a live stage presentation with a score by Philip Glass and a film by two UK artists, Al and Al. And these kinds of productions, again, while they're not going to teach a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old or a 7-year-old, they're not going to teach them the general theory of relativity, sure can fire up their imagination and make them want to learn the science. And I think that is a vital role that Hollywood can play.
Now let me grab a phone call. This is Bill in Webster. Go ahead, Bill.
Thanks, Evan. There seems to be an increase in collaboration between physicists and philosophers when looking at some of these questions. Can you speak to that collaboration? Are they looking at what it means to in these other dimensions, or where is that collaboration going?
Sure. No, there is. There are some physicists who unfortunately have made public statements that philosophers have nothing to contribute to science, that they haven't contributed anything in thousands of years, one of my colleagues unfortunately said. And that's just not true. Philosophers have a wonderful way of examining a theory of physics and finding the hidden assumptions, finding the rickety foundations that we physicists might have glossed over. And the conversations that we as physicists can have with philosophers can be beneficial to everybody. I personally have an ongoing conversation with a handful of philosophers in the area of quantum mechanics. There are some puzzles about quantum physics that we've yet to fully understand, how we go from the probabilistic description the math gives us to the definite reality that we all observe. It's called the measurement problem. And philosophers have done a wonderful job of teasing out this problem, of knocking down proposed solutions that don't really make sense, and working hand in hand with physicists, I believe, is how we are going to finally solve this kind of problem. So a very fruitful interchange between physicists and philosophers.
Thank you, Bill and Webster. Just a few minutes left and we'll let Brian Green go. The co-founder, by the way, of the World Science Festival, among the many other things on your resume. It's actually, you're very difficult to squeeze a resume in, Brian, when I'm introducing.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for being here.
World Science Festival, been a great success, and for anyone who's never attended, what was the goal there, and what do you make of what it became essentially?
Well, the goal was to create a live event where kids and adults, the person who's a novice, the person who's a science enthusiast, could just immerse themselves for 5 days of wall-to-wall science with programs that involve the leading voices in science, but produced by producers that have the knack for finding the story in difficult science so that a general audience can follow the story arc and in the process get the basic ideas of the discovery. We launched in 2008. We had no idea what the audience was going to be, but immediately, first year we had over 100,000 people at this 5-day event, and now we regularly are well over 200,000 people, and we've basically capped it. There's no more room. All the events sell out. We're now going international. We've got World Science Festival Brisbane coming up in March. We're in conversation with a lot of other cities around the world, and I think this all speaks to the fact that the world recognizes that our future hinges on having the next generation excited by science, and moreover, people have finally woken up to the idea that the ideas of science can be grasped if they're presented in an accessible way and they can be utterly thrilling. And that's what these events are dedicated to, having more people have that experience.
Brian, thanks for your time. We're all looking forward to seeing you in Rochester 2 weeks from tomorrow. And thanks for the great work that you do in presenting these kind of subjects to the public in such digestible manners. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Brian Green joining us on the line this hour. You can see Brian 2 weeks from tomorrow at the George Eastman Museum on East Avenue. And Doug Berkeley has been here, the executive director of Nexus NY. You excited enough now, Doug? You got a great communicator there.
Yeah, I think you know, I was exposed to Brian probably 6 or 8 years ago when I was doing some self-education in the field of physics, and I'd read quite a few books on quantum physics and other things, and I think you get a little sense for how he explains the complex simply. And so I hope people will come out and hear him give his talk in 2 weeks.
All right, so we got about 30 seconds. The details, if you want to sign up, you can go to nexus-ny.org. Click on Clean Energy Event. What is the event? What's the timing? The details, Doug, go.
Yeah, so Brian, doors open at 4:15. Brian will give his talk at 5 o'clock, about a 45-minute talk followed by a brief Q&A. 6 o'clock. The companies who are graduating from the Nexus New York program will give brief updates on their progress through the program and the next steps with their companies, followed by food and drinks and networking.
Have fun. Thanks for coming in today. Thanks for bringing Brian Green to Rochester and to Connections for our audience today. And I know we will talk to you again soon, Doug.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening to member-supported public radio. This is a very important week for WXXI. We only do this 4 times a year, but we need your help and your support to make these kind of programs work. And if you call 454-6300 or jump online, if you support Connections, if you appreciate what we do, do it now. WXXI.org/give. Thanks very much to Val LaBanca, the engineer of this program, Megan Mack, the producer of this program. I'm Evan Dawson, and this is Connections, a member-supported public radio.